Hello, I'm Sandy Wiggins. This is number 0270, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0270. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Eric Schwartz, who is the director of the documentary Tattoo Nation. What was the reaction from people in the Body Ink world when this film came out?
They were really very, very pleased that I told the story, that I was accurate, and that everyone that was given the credit that they deserve, and that I really explained the motivation behind the tattoos. And people who are not tattooed enjoy the film. I've had so many people come up to me and say, I want to thank you for making this film. I don't have tattoos, nor do I ever want one. But now I understand why people get tattoos, and also I'm not scared of them.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit is back on the program to talk about communication in a relationship. There should be an open dialogue.
Discussions about exes, discussions about a person's past, telling a person to calm down, telling a person the truth, even if that person may not like hearing the truth, is still very important and I believe necessary for the success of a long-term relationship. It's not the topic itself, it's the way it's brought up.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He has a theory on a dead bear cub found in Central Park.
People have been trying to figure out how in the world did a baby bear get into Central Park and then run over by a car. I think that somebody had a baby bear as a pet. I know that sounds strange. Took him for a walk in Central Park. He got off the leash and a car hit him. So that's mystery. It's cleared up as far as I'm concerned. But we haven't had a bear in Central Park for 100 years.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0270 was Sandy Wiggins, who is an application specialist in a legal office. I believe that's fancy speak for law firm computer geek. Anyway, he's also a former radio colleague and a former racquetball partner. So thank you very much, Sandy, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Andrew Whitaker picked up his girlfriend from work, and they got into an argument because she was highly intoxicated, according to the resulting police report. 34-year-old Tammy Heiser works as a stripper at a club in Daytona Beach, Florida. They were staying at a nearby hotel, but before they could get there, Heiser allegedly started punching Whitaker in the face. Now, once he parked, he ran into their room, and Tammy was in hot pursuit. He ran into the room, and by then, Tammy had allegedly grabbed a fire axe and threatened to hit him with it if he had called police. Her coordination was terrible, so she was just slushing around, he said, and he was able to get the axe away from her. Now, as he went out to call police, he says, she resumed punching him in the face. She was arrested and charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Even though Whitaker doesn't want to press any charges, he wants to marry her. I see spending the rest of my life with her, he said. Yeah, that life might be shorter than he thinks if she gets to be more proficient with an axe. I think it's time to dredge up my favorite Arthur quote.
Thank you for a memorable afternoon. Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
Yes. Moving right along, Italy has a marijuana problem. It's not cheap enough to accommodate patients after being legalized for medical use last year. Even with a prescription, it costs 38 euros per gram. That's $1,350 US per ounce after being brought in from Holland. So the government has ordered the Italian army to grow high-quality pot so the government can supply it to the citizens more cheaply and perhaps even free. Added bonus, street pot distribution is controlled by the mafia, and making it free might hurt its business. Some politicians' decisions are tied to the country's Catholic mentality, says Gianpaolo Grassi, who is Italy's foremost expert on pot. And by the way, just how does one actually become Italy's foremost expert on pot? Perhaps that's a question for another day. Anyway, Grassi goes on to say, this makes growing medical cannabis agreeable for everyone. You know, in the U.S., they could recruit growers from the prison population since most of them already have expertise with marijuana. Just a thought. Supply and demand. Supply and demand. Selfie fever has begun to sully the sacred Islamic pilgrimages to Mecca. According to scholars who complained to Arab News in September, what for centuries has been a hallowed journey intended to renew the spirit of Islam, that all Muslims are called upon to experience at least once, has come for some in the so-called Facebook era to resemble a trip to Disneyland, with visitors to the sacred mosque texting friends the evidence of their piety. Another scholar complained in a New York Times opinion piece in October that Mecca is often experienced more as a tour packaged by marketers and centered around Mecca's upscale shopping malls rather than religious structures. A sad sign of the times. Sad, sad sign of the times. By the way, when people finally get to heaven, if they do, are they going to take a selfie at the pearly gates? I'm just kind of curious. Anyway, here's a quote. My friends, I am a man of action. That quote comes from Roger Weber, who is running for a Minnesota House seat in November. And he's now being sued by a neighbor over a property line dispute near Nashwauk. Now, rather than working it out with an arbitrator or mediator or letting the legal process run its course, Weber in 2013 took a chainsaw and sliced completely in half the large two-car garage that Weber says sat half on his property and half on his neighbor's. Yeah, well, he's a man of action, but we're not sure it's the action that some of the voters would want. I'm just saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, if you listen to this show long enough, then you know that bizarre things happen in Florida and bizarre things happen in Walmart. So what happens when you combine the two? Well, you get a story like this. A man was arrested for allegedly having sex with a stuffed horse in a Florida Walmart. According to a police report, employees at the Brooksville Walmart outside Tampa saw 19-year-old Sean Johnson, yes, of course he's named Johnson, grab a stuffed red horse from a clearance shelf and take it to the bedding department. What happened next was caught on security cameras, police say. The suspect allegedly proceeded to hump the stuffed horse to completion. That's what the police report says. Utilizing short, fast movements. Oh, now they're judging, too, apparently, in the police report. He then placed the used toy onto a comforter set, contaminating that property, too, the cops allege. He fled the store, but cops arrested him across the street. In a statement, he admitted, I did unmentionables to a stuffed animal and called it a horrible act. He's charged with indecent exposure and criminal mischief. Meanwhile, I'm guessing that stuffed horse is wondering if this is just a one-time thing, or will Sean ever call back, or what's the deal? It feels so used. You know how it goes. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? From counterculture to world phenomenon, tattoos are now a huge part of our culture. Director Eric Schwartz documented how ink went from outlaw status to retail store availability in just one generation. His indie underground film, Tattoo Nation, explores the previously untold facts and history of art on flesh. And Eric joins us on the line right now from Colorado. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine. Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure.
First of all, how did this all become a film for you? What was your fascination with tattoos?
Well, about 8 or 9 years ago, I noticed that more people were getting tattooed. And it was interesting to me. It certainly was nothing like it is now. But I was just curious, and I'm a photographer, and I do art photography. And the type of photography that I do is involved with just any subject that I'm interested in, and they usually wind up in galleries. And so I started speaking to people, and I found out that their very thought, it was completely opposite, Peter, to what I thought. It wasn't, just an impulsive thing at all. These people were very thoughtful and really quite intelligent and interesting people to speak to about their tattoo and how much it meant to them and what it meant to them.
So you say this is the opposite of what you initially thought?
Yeah. I was like everyone else. I thought, they just drunk and went into a tattoo parlor. Nothing could be further from the truth.
So I take it you don't have a tattoo?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But I found tattoos and the people and the artists, the whole culture, fascinating. And when I say the whole culture, quite honestly, what I found is that these were regular, hardworking people.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, it's gone from underground literally to mainstream, but there are also different types of tattoos and different types of people who have tattoos. I mean, it seems to be very acceptable to have a subtle tattoo, either one or two small tattoos in the place of your choice. And then there's the other extreme where people have sleeves and body art and done on their back and whatnot. There are two different groups of people, right?
Well, I would say that was true, but right now it's really blending into one. I mean, you'd be surprised. The work that's being done on people today, and it's fairly extensive. I mean, young professional women who have pieces like across their chest and, part of their arms. And I would say that it's not really two groups of people anymore. And there were people who were tattooed even heavier than we would think, but they kept it covered. So, be it, a short sleeve shirt would cover it or things like that. So there were actually Fortune 500 executives who had full body suits, somewhat like the Yakuza, but would not be tattooed, let's say, above a V-neck or, part of their arm. So it's been around. It was just kept quiet. It was hidden.
So in talking with people, in doing this film, did you discover any similarities or similar goal into the inspiration of getting a tattoo? Is it inspiring? Is it empowering? What was the motivation for a lot of these people?
Well, you hit on two of them. It was inspiring. People have used tattoo, like other art forms, for all sorts of different reasons. The thing that this movie explains is how it went from something being put on you, where you would pick a design off the wall, to something that the client would collaborate with the artist and bring out something that they wanted to express about themselves. And this all came from the Chicano community. Mm. And also the degree of illustration. It's a very unusual story. It really shouldn't have happened, but it did. And so that's what the film is about.
You mentioned the Chicano community, and I was about to ask, have you found a dividing line either between social status, between racial divides? And the reason why I bring that up is because there are also, or even religious divides, because in some cases, certain people with the religions wouldn't or couldn't have tattoos. Certain racial groups never wanted to have tattoos. Is that changing too?
Yeah, it is changing. And that does surprise me. As a matter of fact, there are tattoo shops now in Israel, in Tel Aviv. Yes, it has been changing, and it has been going across the social classes. I mean, it's really, it was at one time, well, it's funny, a long time ago, 75% of European royalty was tattooed. And then it became lower class because of the sailors. And then in this country, it was like, sailors, criminals, the underworld. And then it just started, coming back up. And now it really, it's actually become a status symbol. You look at, like, the NBA players. Boy, if they don't have tattoos, everyone thinks they ran out of money.
But, again, you bring up another point. You've listed the royalty, sailors, mm-hmm. criminals, even NBA players. There seems to be, in a lot of these tattoo worlds, a collective, a group of people who seem to identify with each other based on their tattoos, regardless of what economic or social background they come from.
I agree with you. It does seem to be a fraternity. And if you go to a tattoo convention, which there are 350 in the U.S. and a number in the world, give you an idea, I just came back from one of the larger ones, which was the London Tattoo Convention. That 30,000 people came through in 3 days. I mean, pretty big.
Wow. So you've done...
and you're right, because the thing that's in common, it doesn't matter what your politics are, it's very much like musicians, you know? Everything goes aside because of this one common interest, and that's tattoo. But I think that is starting to break down as it goes more mainstream.
You've been immersed in this now for a while, and you say you don't have a tattoo. Does it make you change your mind about the possibility of wanting to get one?
No, oddly enough. It's really weird, because as fascinating as I find it, and the imagery and the people involved, and, you know, it's just now seeing how so much of humanity is choosing to, you know, express themselves. I call it authors of their own story, you know, visually. It's just not my form of expression. My form of expression is, you know, photography and now making films. So that's how I do it.
One of the things people had always used to warn us about when it came to tattoos is, you know, this is something you're going to regret when you get older. Did you experience that situation with people?
Never.
Wow.
Now, because the people who get tattoos, who have been getting tattoos now, and even before, they really love the tattoos. They're committed. I think statistically, I think 15% of the people who've gotten tattoos say they shouldn't have done it or would like to get them removed. But it's not very high.
Your film, Tattoo Nation, how can one find it? Where can they see it?
They can go to Amazon, and they can buy it on Amazon, or they can go to TattooNation.com, and they can stream it. We have a 72-hour stream, and we also have what we call a lifetime stream. And they can also buy the DVD online.
What was the reaction by people? You know, it's one thing to say, I'm doing a film. When it comes out, what is the reaction from folks within Tattoo Nation, those who make it a living to either do ink or who have lots of ink themselves?
That's a good question. It's been because I truly respect the people who are doing the tattoos, both the artists and the collectors. They're treated with extraordinary respect, and they were really very, very pleased that I told the story, that it was accurate, and that everyone was given the credit that they deserve, and that I really explained the motivation behind the tattoos. And people who are not tattooed enjoy the film. And I've had so many people come up to me and say, I want to thank you for making this film. I don't have tattoos, nor do I ever want one, but now I understand why people get tattoos, and also I'm not scared of them. And now they talk to the people who have tattoos. I've also had family members come up to me, not my family, but, you know, members of other families come up and say to me, we were going to throw our kid out of the house, literally, because they were getting tattooed, and now we understand them. And thanks. You know, that was something I didn't expect.
And therein lies part of the amazing story. The film is called Tattoo Nation. People can look at the website and find out more information at TattooNation.com. Eric, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Eric Schwartz, director of Tattoo Nation. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0270, and you'll find the link to the Tattoo Nation website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the film directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to a relationship coach. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his Yellow Mobile Conveyance Lounge. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. And much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to listen to radio. And we got a couple of stories, actually three, from Vermont. Hello, Vermont. And hello to our friends at WSTJ, where The Stuff File is also heard. We don't often have stories from Vermont, but then again, I'm in Montreal, and we often don't have stories from Montreal either. So Vermont, apparently you're ahead of the game then, as far as we're concerned on this show. So yes, a couple of stories that have garnered worldwide attention showing that there are some sensitivities in your state in Vermont, folks. Number one, Leanne and Brian Kowiak of Waterbury, Vermont, complained to Ben & Jerry's in September that its new ice cream flavor, Hazed and Confused, was shocking and upsetting and should be changed immediately. Though most customers recognize the name only as a play on words on the 1993 cult movie Dazed and Confused, the Kowiaks insist that they never should be reminded that their 19-year-old son died in a college hazing incident. Well, let's be honest. Are they ever going to forget it? I don't think so. I don't know how much damage an ice cream flavor name is going to cause, but let's just move along. Story number two, in Winooski, Vermont, in August, the local eatery, Sneakers Bistro, hello folks at Sneakers, earned public advertising space by beautifying one of the city's flower beds, and managers used it for a quixotic ad, Yield for Sneakers Bacon. Now, after one woman complained that the sign disrespected those who do not consume pork, Sneakers took it down. Okay, you know, there are a lot of things I don't eat, but I also don't recoil in horror when I see signs touting them. Lady, get a grip. And we have another story from Vermont, folks. Yes, we do. A man in Harwich, Vermont, has a chance to go to jail. He has pleaded not guilty to breaking into a jewelry store in July and stealing $110,000 worth of handmade items. The man's name is, wait for it, Perry Mason. That's right, Perry Mason. The Caledonian Record reports bail for the 46-year-old Mason was set at $50,000. But even if he's able to post it, Mason isn't likely to leave prison right away. He's being held on a parole violation. That's right, this Perry Mason is a felon. A prosecutor said he also has 5 prior burglary convictions and an escape conviction. Mason's lawyer, Jessica Burke, says the state's evidence is weak, but police say in an affidavit it was through the arrest of another man that investigators identified their suspect. No sign of Della Street, but I'm guessing this is one case District Attorney Hamilton Berger could win. Okay, so New York Giants tight end Larry Donnell manages his own fantasy league team by drafting NFL players for virtual competitions based on their real-life statistics of the previous weekend. You know how it works, right? Okay. So Donnell lamented to New Jersey's The Record that he had benched virtual Larry Donnell on his fantasy team the week before because he thought his other tight end, Vernon Davis, would do better. In reality, real Donnell had a career-high game with his 3 touchdowns leading the real Giants to a 45-14 victory. However, Donnell's fantasy team lost badly because virtual Larry Donnell and his weekend statistical bonanza was on Donnell's bench. Okay, you know, there are millions of us in fantasy football leagues out there, and most of them don't have any kind of monetary exchange at all, although there are some leagues that offer prizes. But after hearing a story like this, somewhere out there is Pete Rose, formerly of the Cincinnati Reds, whose head is about to explode on his exiled sports island. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a private moment quickly turned embarrassing for an Italian couple who got stuck together while they were having sex in the Adriatic Sea. Taking advantage of a relatively deserted beach at Porto San Giorgio on Italy's east coast earlier this week, the pair took their passions to the sea but was reportedly unable to separate due to suction caused by the surrounding water. The duo remained stuck in the water briefly until they were able to summon a woman who was walking on the shore for help. The woman brought them a towel and they struggled out of the water. A doctor was called to the scene and the couple was rushed to hospital, where the woman's uterus was dilated to relieve pressure and allow the two to separate. But one health expert expressed her cynicism about the report to England's Independent. Professor Helen Ward, an expert in public health from Imperial College in London, said, "I wouldn't say it's impossible, nothing's impossible, but I think it sounds highly unlikely." Ward said that if two people did get stuck together briefly, the man would likely manage to release himself by losing his erection. Well, hold on a second there, Prof. What if the guy had help? You know, one of those little blue pills. I mean, everybody knows the warnings on the bottle. If you have an erection lasting more than 4 hours, call a doctor. It could happen. It could happen. That's certainly an interesting relationship. And let's just talk about relationships in general, shall we, as we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Relationship coach Frank Kermit is back on the show, and this time around we're talking about talking, communication in a relationship. The lines of communication must be open in a relationship, but are there things you shouldn't talk about? Are there any third rail topics that can instantly fry the parties involved? Frank joins us on the line once again via Skype to Skype communications from here in Montreal. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So I was reading this article. It's by a psychotherapist and author by the name of Mary Jo Rapini, who was listing things to beware of, hot-button issues. And in talking off-air before doing this with you, you mentioned the fact that these really aren't taboo issues. It's just a matter of the way you phrase it, right?
Exactly. Now, I can understand why she would write the article in that way, because it's easier to give people very specific tools and rules to follow, as opposed to giving the in-depth explanation behind it.
Right.
Generally speaking, though, if we're talking about two people in a serious relationship, there really should be no topic that's too taboo to discuss. unless one of the individuals says, look, I really can't handle this topic. But discussions about exes, discussions about a person's past, telling a person to calm down, telling a person the truth, even if that person may not like hearing the truth, is still very important and I believe necessary for the success of a long-term relationship. It's not the topic itself, it's the way it's brought up.
Ah, I see. I should list some of the things that she mentions in her article. And she says, telling your partner to man up or anything you say that makes him feel less of a man. That's one she mentions. Telling her she would look more sexy if, and you can fill in the blank, whatever that if might be. Telling her to calm down when she's upset. Rolling your eyes or sighing, a sign of aggression or resentment. Those are just some of the things she mentions. But these things do happen in relationships anyway, don't they?
Oh, absolutely, and they're going to happen. But now let's look at each one,
okay. And
we can look at the underlying emotional needs behind them. First of all, telling a woman she would look sexier, you know, if she did this or if she did that. Doing it in that way is a criticism. However, expressing what it is you like is okay. What you can say is, what I really find sexy are these particular topics, these particular actions, this particular type of wardrobe. I find this sexy is very different from saying you would be sexier if. So the topic itself, what I find sexy as a man or what any man would find sexy, is an okay topic to discuss. It's the way it's brought up. When a woman tells a man, hey, you should man up. Well, let's remember that insulting your partner or telling your partner anything that would make your partner an attack on a person's character is never any good. However, you can say something like, it would make me feel more secure if I knew that you were able to deal with this situation. Do you have a plan?
Right. One of the ones on the list that I tend to think might really be a red flag is someone saying, doesn't matter which one of the party is involved, someone saying that your partner isn't as smart as you. I mean, is there any way around that one?
Well, I think that we have to look at the context. Just insulting someone and saying to somebody, I'm smarter than you, so there. Well, this is not a discussion point, and I don't want to just look at the Band-Aid solution of just don't say it. If there's an underlying attitude there of I'm superior than you, that's a problem. And constantly attacking someone like that is an act of abuse. That's emotional abuse when you're constantly telling someone I'm smarter than you. However, if you want to point out to your partner, look, this is my area of specialty. This is my domain. I'm trying to give you some information here about something that I know about. If you're resistant to me, then there's an underlying issue for that.
One of the ones I actually found very interesting on the list, I think just plays into the fact that you really, like anybody else, you really have to know your audience. And in this case, you really have to know your partner. And that is calling someone or teasing or calling someone playful names, which you might find playful, but they don't. You have to know them well enough to know whether they can handle something like that, right?
Here we're talking about compatibility. Look, some people are playful by nature, and they'll do that with everyone. And if somebody is sensitive about a particular nickname or a particular subject that they don't want to be teased on, now we're talking about compatibility and boundaries. So it's not so much the idea that, well, you should never be playful. In this one case, I would agree with what was written, that if a person is very sensitive about a subject, it's something to stay away from. And that, again, is a matter of not being an abuser, an emotional abuser.
Number 12 I also find very interesting. That's the last one on this particular list. And that is, and the way I'm going to phrase the question is, does one have to literally, from their mate's point of view, erase their past? Because number 12 is, mentioning any fond times with an ex, the only exception, according to this writer, is a widow or widower.
I disagree with that completely, and here's why. Anytime you say, well, you should not have to talk about an ex, look, everybody has some kind of insecurity, But when that insecurity is blown out of proportion where you cannot handle the truth about your partner's past, that's a red flag.
Okay.
And it's okay to talk. Let's be clear, though. It's okay to talk about a nice memory about an ex within context.
Okay. So then
a couple is going to, let's say.
Sorry, go ahead.
Let's say a couple is going to a very particular part of town. And they're trying to establish some sort of romantic connection. That is not a time to say, oh, I've been here before with my ex and it was so wonderful and then reliving it. That's not an appropriate context. However, if the question comes up, hey, you know, what kind of a relationship have you had in the past? I want to know because I'm thinking of taking us to the next level. That is a proper context to bring up the good and the bad aspects of past relationships.
Okay, well, what about the other issue that comes up often in relationships? And that is pictures. And I'm not talking about racy pictures of any kind. Just normal relationship pictures that show you and an ex on a vacation, maybe with other members of her family or your family. I know people who personally want to get rid of all pictures they have with an ex. I know people who have new mates or wives or husbands who want their mate to get rid of pictures of an ex. But what if somebody in your relationship wants to get rid of the pictures and you don't?
Well, there's a difference between getting rid of mementos of a person's past and making sure that they're just not on display. Because everybody's got a past. And until that relationship that you're in right now gets serious, the person really doesn't have any say as to what you do with those mementos. Once you reach a point where you are very serious with somebody, now it becomes a matter of, well, what are the boundaries here? If someone does not want to get rid of past mementos, that's actually okay. However, keeping them handy where everybody can see them is a problem.
Well, I understand the idea of not putting your exes up on the mantle. But if you have a photo album that chronologically has your history, I don't necessarily see why someone has to be removed from it unless you yourself feel they should be removed from it. I mean, isn't that person's choice?
Well, we're looking at... let's look at the example of a photo album.
Yeah.
All right. Photo album, chronological. Hey, and somebody was a part of their past, especially if they have children together. If they have children together, it's not like you're going to be able to come in and say, well, forget that person who happens to be the father or the mother of your children. That photo album is as much a part of the children's lives, too. So in something like that, no, you don't have to demand that those pictures be removed. If you're going to accept someone, you need to accept them and their past. Now, there's, again, as you said, there's a difference. You don't want to necessarily see it displayed. If those photos of an ex happen to be a screensaver on your computer, okay, we've got a little bit of a problem there.
Exactly.
Okay, exactly. But you have to understand, at this point in time, most people have some sort of past. And with the divorce rate being at 40%, it's unlikely that any demand that you make on a person saying, you better get rid of all of these things from your past, is going to be accepted with grace. The fact is, you're dealing with people who have a past, you either accept it or you don't. And if you can't accept it, then you might need to do a little bit of personal growth in order to enter this world of dating and relationships.
All good points, as usual, Frank. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. People can find out more information by going to your website, right?
That's right. They can go to franktalkswithans.com, franktalks.com. I work internationally. I work with clients around the world through Skype, through the phone. And I'm very happy. My rates are very reasonable. So if you're interested in some personal growth and development, if you're having a struggle with dating and relationships, franktalks.com is the place to go.
Thank you very much, Frank. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure. I look forward to the next time.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check out his website at franktalks.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0270, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A new piece of equipment about the size of a deck of playing cards is being called the future of law enforcement. It uses no bullets and isn't a new kind of armor, but experts believe it will reduce violence and even save lives. It's a body-mounted camera now being worn by many police officers. From routine traffic stops to intense confrontations with armed criminals, the cameras have a wide range of benefits. In one community, the use of force by officers declined 60% during the first year these cameras were used, and citizen complaints against police fell 88%. That leads to another huge benefit, fewer lawsuits. With many cities paying out millions of dollars every year in lawsuits against police, taxpayers could be the big winners as these cameras become more widely used. Let's be fair. Thomas Jefferson once said, "Whenever you do a thing, act as if all the world were watching." Little did he know that one day that would be possible. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses. But recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, who, as we speak, is not actually in a cab. Hi, Peter.
Hi, I'm actually in a bus.
What? Why are you on a bus?
Well, if I'm going to go from one point to another, and it has nothing to do with my occupation, what I'm going to do is take public transportation, which is what I would suggest to anybody who comes to New York City. And the fact that I'm speaking somewhat muted is I don't want everybody around me to get hysterical as I start screaming, ranting, and raging, as you usually let me do.
Yes, plus, once you start ranting and raving, people will say, "Wait a minute, isn't that the Gabby Cabby?" And they'll realize that there's a celebrity in their midst. And then, you know, the paparazzi will come along and all chaos will ensue.
Well, thank you. You flatter me.
Yes. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about, I understand that there is a new statue of some sort in Union Square, basically opposite Abraham Lincoln. What's this new statue?
Well, just to show you how up-to-date and live radio this is, since I wrote that note to you, it's been removed. But it was there for a few days. It was a very good, I mean, technically, physically, statue of Edward Snowden. Now, Snowden, as you and your nice listeners will remember, is that he's the guy that supposedly revealed that the United States spies on everybody, including me and you.
So the statue has been taken down?
Yeah, well, somebody finally woke up, you know, one of the people in the city administration. Because remember, he is one of the most wanted people. There is an arrest warrant out for him. And I doubt that in this lifetime he's not coming back to the New York City, United States, voluntarily.
Mm. Meanwhile, as you mentioned, you are in public transit as we speak. Plus, during the day, you get to drive a cab, which means you get to be around a lot of people on a regular basis, total strangers. What are you hearing about, you know, the Ebola watch, the Ebola scare?
Well, I'm not going to say that word on the bus.
Okay.
But now that you've said the word, everybody in your audience knows what we're talking about. I got to tell you what it is, seriously, and I'm very serious about this. People are not that frightened of the disease. People are frightened that they don't trust the government. They feel that whatever is going on, we're not hearing the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You had this guy, Frieden, who's the head of communicable disease. He hasn't been straightforward. The Obama administration hasn't been straightforward. So the thing that I hear from most people is, I think the chances of me getting a disease are highly remote. But I do think my society, my medical world, my government world is going to screw us and we're all going to die.
Well, that's not very optimistic, is it?
How many politicians in Canada do you trust?
Oh, all of them, Peter. All of them.
Well, see, you're smart because you're there and I'm not.
Anyway, on to other things in your fair city. I understand that there is a landlord that has been named the city's worst landlord of the year. That I didn't know there was a contest, but apparently he is it.
Well, what happens is that the landlords, and it's not every single one of them, will try to cut corners in every way they can. Maybe give a little less heat than they should. Maybe give a little less hot water than they should. You know, maybe don't fix things so quickly and repaint and what have you. You know, that's kind of, I guess, normal for the landlord-tenant thing, which was going on for centuries. But this particular guy and another hardcore group of these guys really don't do what they're supposed to do. In other words, they feel all they have to do is collect rents from the tenants, and then there's nothing more that they have to do. And that particular guy, I don't know, what is it, 3,000 summons or something that he's had, because he's really like the ultimate slumlord. The problem is, why don't you stick him in jail? Or why don't you make him do it? Well, unfortunately, the only thing in this city that's more corrupt than the landlords are the people who work for the buildings department. They just don't do their job, and that's why these sleazy guys get away with it. But let me hasten to add, it's not all. It's, you know, there's many nice ones. For instance, the building that I live in has a very nice landlord, and there's no problem. And he certainly will go to heaven. I hope not before his time, but when it's his time, that's where he's going.
Hmm. Now, you know, you're saying maybe we should put them in jail. How about this for a punishment? Make slumlords live in their own building.
Well, occasionally you run into a situation where a judge does that, you know, in housing court. The problem is they usually give them one or maybe at the most two nights, and that doesn't really serve much of a purpose. No, the solution is very simple, and you are in a French-speaking area, so the people who are near to you will understand what I'm saying. It's a thing called the guillotine. Now, what I'm proposing is that we put one of them in Times Square and just, you know, let one of the slumlords meet, what they used to call her, Miss Guillotine or something?
Just simply,
Madame Guillotine.
Yeah, just simply guillotined.
Yeah, well, and that would solve the problem. You only got to do one, so don't everybody get excited. Just one, and boy, would you see how well the buildings are taken care of.
Mm. By the way, I believe what you just basically described was the origin of the term hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think so.
While we're on the topic of buildings, I understand there was a record for the most expensive co-op ever sold in New York. Apparently a guy... the owner of the New York Jets is selling his 14-room duplex for how much?
I don't remember. I told you. I hope you remember.
I think,
once again,
I think it's about $80 million.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody concentrated on the fact that he's going to get $80 million for the apartment. What I'm concentrating on is how does any businessman, and of course there's many of them, how do you accumulate anything worth $80 million? You're either charging too much for your tickets or screwing your employees. I mean, I'm a capitalist, but come on, give me a break. $80 million for an apartment?
And of course, the question begs to be asked, if you're moving out of an $80 million apartment, what are you moving into?
Probably a one-bedroom studio with a little fold-away.
On another note, I understand New York City has been sending actors into public hospitals to test response skills. How's that working out?
Oh, I think, listen, let me tell you something. My own personal opinion, and that's what you're going to get, is I think it's absolutely stupid, and it's a waste of resources. I mean, here you've got emergency rooms, which are unbelievably busy. So you send some guy in with all of the symptoms of the disease I do not wish to mention because I'm sitting on a bus with other people around me. And, you know, they want to see how the emergency room technicians react to it, which is absolutely ridiculous. And as I say, a tremendous waste of resources. It's the kind of thing that only a grandstanding politician could come up with.
So you're not a fan of the idea?
I know. I think if you wanted, you could send a team in to each emergency room and say, here's what you should do, here's what you shouldn't do, you know, all of that. And that's going back to my original point with you. After what's gone on in Texas, you got a nation of people, certainly a city here, that just doesn't trust the guys that are running the show. Let me point out, last year in New York City, 13,000 people died from diabetes. You want to talk about something? diabetes. Don't worry about getting the disease.
Well, we started off this segment this time around by talking about one particular park. I want to end off by talking about another. I understand they found a body in Central Park.
A bear, of all things. Now, it was a baby bear, and it was hit by a car. So people have been trying to figure out how in the world did a baby bear get into Central Park and then run over by a car. I think that somebody had a baby bear as a pet. I know that sounds strange. Took him for a walk in Central Park. He got off the leash, and a car hit him. So that's mystery. It's cleared up as far as I'm concerned. But we haven't had a bear in Central Park for 100 years.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Central Park, come on. You're talking about New York City. If someone had a pet bear on a leash, don't you think someone would have seen him or her?
Well, then, Peter, you certainly still don't understand what New York City is all about. He could have walked through Times Square with the bear on the leash, and no one would have said a thing.
That's true. Everyone's looking at the naked guitar player.
Remember, this is New York.
This is New York, where even the Gabby Cabby rides public transit. Peter, people can find out more information by going to your website, which is www.gabby.com. They can also send you an email at peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you for that.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And we will get to our idiot of the day in just a few moments. But first, I had to bring up this story, which, well, let's be honest, was a contender. So let's call it idiot adjacent. Okay? 20-year-old Walter Morrison, a United Parcel Service baggage agent at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, apparently intended only to swipe random parcels, but inadvertently came upon, in one package, a diamond, later found to be worth about $160,000. Police charged him in September as he traded the diamond in to a friend for a gram of marijuana, which is worth about $20 retail. See? That definitely borders on idiocy, doesn't it? But, no. You've waited for it. Here it comes right now. This, ladies and gentlemen, is your idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
22-year-old Stephen Coolius went into the Forest Hills Golf and Country Club in Holiday, Florida, dressed in a hoodie with a bandana over his face. He then allegedly shouted for everyone to put their hands up, that this was a holdup, and ordered the bartender to give him the money from the cash register. When the defendant realized that there were other customers at the bar, he took off his bandana and hood and stated he was just kidding. Coolius was arrested, and in a search, officers allegedly found a pellet gun and methamphetamine residue on him. He was charged with attempted robbery with a deadly weapon or firearm, aggravated assault with intent to commit a felony, possession of drug paraphernalia, and violating a pretrial release from a previous case, where he was arrested for attempted robbery of the very same club. Oh, man. Why would someone try to rob the same country club that they allegedly tried to rob before and for which they were currently out on bail for, awaiting their trial? Well, one reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0270. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0270. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed. We'll be right back.